are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Well, you know what? I'm just going off what I'm reading on the internet, and the internet's lying to me. They're lying.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I like to think I'm more than Evan Peterson. I like to think that should be a good thing and not like, oh, I just have this guy over here.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Yeah, the internet's never lied to me, so I don't know what you're talking about.
I lie to you all the time, though, through the internet, so does that count?
You are fake news.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome into the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Ben Brents, and tonight I am joined by just Evan Peterson. How are you doing tonight, Mr. Peterson?
Well, I was a lot better before you referred to me as just Evan Peterson. I like to think I'm more than Evan Peterson. I like to think that should be a good thing and not like, oh, I just have this guy over here.
Well, I mean, we don't have our super enthusiastic partner Chuck Anderson, so it's a little bit depressing tonight, wouldn't you say?
There's so many things I'm going to miss about Chuck, and I'm going to throw some homages into him throughout the podcast. So be looking out for those as well as we pay tribute to Mr. Anderson. What is he doing? Anniversary stuff?
Yeah, he's got an anniversary. You make it sound like he died, but yeah, he's got an anniversary. Let's keep it easy over here, right?
That's all I do. Easy Ev, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, Easy Ev FWFB is your Twitter handle, so it makes it a little bit easier and a nice segue right there. And I'm at PBrentis FWFB. Evan, why don't we just kind of jump in and talk a little bit about the trade deadline? What are your thoughts on it?
I mean, it was a crazy day. I was at work trying to keep up with all of the updates. There was a lot of just some teams that are really stacked going into the playoffs, and I'm just really interested in what this all means. So if you want to get into it, did you have a starting point? Or I think we all know the lead here, right?
Brandon Kinsler, right?
Of course, Brandon Kinsler.
I mean, Brandon Kinsler did go from Minnesota over to the Nationals, and I think the biggest thing is, who's going to close for the Nationals?
Well, you were saying that this move kind of killed the Ryan Madsen value, and he's been fantastic this year. I was saying that I've been a Sean Doolittle guy, and I think the one thing that we kind of I guess I never really got your take on this. I've never really bought into Kinsler this year. His contact rate was really high among relievers. I didn't really, see a whole lot from him that I wanted to buy into, but he's produced 28 saves, I believe. Do you think, obviously the closing job for the Nationals is a very valuable spot that can jump anybody up into like top 10 consideration. Do you think you'd jump Kinsler up that high as trade deadline for fantasy teams come around?
I don't know if he's someone who jumps a ton for me because he has such a low strikeout rate. You know, he has basically as many saves as he does strikeouts, which makes it a little difficult to trust him going forward. It's just like you said, that contact percentage against him makes it real difficult. When you have 27 strikeouts through 45 in a third innings pitched, it's tough. But he's limited the walks he's given up this year. He only has 11 in 45 innings, so he's not giving up a ton of base runners overall. I mean, he still has a whip of 1.15, so it's not like it's incredibly low, but I do think that the defense behind him is a little bit better, at least in the infield aspect, than what you had over in Minnesota, just because I think that Rendon's a much better third baseman than Sano. I think that Zimmerman's a decent to good defensive first baseman. Murphy's, you know, he's got bad range, but he's still a decent second baseman. And as of right now, Defoe's playing a good shortstop, but when they get Trey Turner back, then, you know, you have a really good, solid infield there. As for the Madsen value, I mean, Madsen's had a fantastic season. You know, he has a sub-2 ERA. He has his ERA is at 1.83. He's got a 0.79 whip. He's got more than a strikeout per inning. I don't know what you can really ask for from a relief guy, but if he gets bumped to a seventh inning role, he kind of loses all value outside of anything that's a holds league. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would definitely agree there. The one thing that I kind of want to bring up with Kinsler, so we think Kinsler's going to take over the ninth inning role, yes?
I do, only for the fact that Dusty Baker is Dusty Baker, and he isn't always the most unconventional person. I mean, he kind of does make things a little easy to kind of predict, but I do think that what they'll do is they'll at least give Doolittle, since he has been getting saves for them, I do think that they'll give him the first crack at it, but the second that he has another bad inning, or appearance, basically, I think that he could get the tug because they do have Kinsler, who has had a good season. But I wouldn't be totally surprised if he just went to Kinsler straight away, given that they just went and acquired him.
Right. Well, the other thing that I was going to bring up is, so Minnesota is sixth in the major leagues with save opportunities with 43. Washington, while they're only four behind them, is, you know, further down the list at 15, which shows, you know, in this 2 months, not that you're going to get a ton of, you know, save opportunities that are going to distance you from the pack, but do you think that going to Washington, a team that might, you know, blow out squads a little more than, you know, the Minnesota Twins might, do you think that might hurt Kinsler's value if you were trying to acquire for him?
I do think it does hurt the value. I kind of saw it the same way as what happened when Chapman went from the Yankees over to the Cubs last year. The Cubs had such a good offense last year, and their pitching was so top tier that Chapman wasn't going to get a ton of save opportunities because of the run differential that would occur every single game, as opposed to the Yankees, whose offense wasn't great last year and their pitching wasn't great. So there were a lot of close games. And you saw that with the Twins this year. There were a ton of close games, which gave Kinsler a ton of opportunities to be able to go and get the saves, and he made the most of his time over in Minnesota. But now when you have the Nationals, who have such a great offense and they have had very good pitching performances this year, I wouldn't be totally surprised if either some of their games ended up in blowouts against them if they go out and throw a player like Edwin Jackson out there and they throw out their B lineup, or they'll just go and throttle another team and they'll do what they did to Milwaukee over the last week and win 15-2. So I do see a lot bigger gaps in run differential for Washington than in Minnesota. So I think that Kinsler won't have as many save opportunities as one would think. I'd be surprised if he got the job for the rest of the season if he had 13 saves going forward. I don't know. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Which isn't terrible, considering what you have for the rest of the season. But, you know, one would think that you may get 20 saves if you were on the Twins, as opposed to 13 on the Nationals, considering how much better the Nationals are. So I definitely think that you have to be a little bit weary of that when you're trying to acquire Kinsler, if he does in fact close. Why don't we move into the next trade, and that's going to be talking about Yu Darvish moving, which is probably the biggest move of the day. What are your thoughts on Yu Darvish going from the American League to the National League, and not only that, going over to the Dodgers?
Well, I mean, it's not like he really needs the, you know, K bump that most are going to, you know, just, you know, cookie cutter analysis, AL to NL talk. The one thing, and I just to try and expand the lens of the Yu Darvish talk further, is do you think that this time that the Dodgers are going to get with him throughout the end of the year does anything for them locking down a long-term deal with him after this year? If they can kind of start getting in that relationship, maybe getting in some you know, subtle talks or whatnot. And if if Darvish was a Dodger next year, do you think that boosts his value, like significantly up into like the second, third round range, or what do you think that could do for him? Or is that just a crazy train of thought that I had?
I don't think that it's going to significantly change his value if he's on the Dodgers next year. I mean, you'll see him get a K bump, because he's going against a pitcher as opposed to a designated hitter. And you may see him get a slightly lower whip and ERA. But over the past few seasons, he has had good ratios. Last year, he had a 3.41 ERA and a 1.12 whip. Now, you'd like him to have a slightly lower ERA, but he only pitched 100 innings last year. You know he's a big K guy. He'll get more wins. I think he could have a similar type of line to what Greinke used to be able to put up when he was the number two over there. And you'll see him maybe have slightly more Ks. But I do think that it gives him a little bit more value, but I think any National League team kind of does the same thing. The good thing for the Dodgers is that they can spend an absolute boatload of money and it doesn't matter. I just don't know if the amount of time that he's going to be over in LA from now until the end of the season really does anything for him. I think he kind of wants to go to the open market and see what he's able to get, considering that he may very potentially be the best pitcher on the market this upcoming season.
Well, yeah, and I agree with that, but the Dodgers probably have the biggest pool as far as resources for the major leagues. And like I said, they're getting this extra time with Darvish to establish this relationship. So it's almost worth, you know, paying whatever you can for it if you think those extra months are going to help you as far as contract negotiations, because I think the Dodgers, regardless, were going to be big players for Darvish, even though their rotation is fairly stacked. And that's the other thing that I kind of wanted to talk about in relation to the Yu Darvish trade. So, like, Kershaw is on the disabled list, but when he comes back, so you're looking at a rotation that's Darvish, Kershaw, Wood, and then for the last two spots, you've kind of got this Rich Hill.
The way Rich Hill is pitched, he's definitely in that top four. He's okay. Probably their third best guy. I would pick him over Alex Wood at this point, just because Alex Wood is going to come up on an innings limit. He didn't pitch much last year because of an injury. He's pitched a ton of innings this year.
But he's put innings on his arm before. It's not like this would be just innings out of nowhere for Alex Wood, though.
No, I agree. But you've seen him go and get split between the rotation and the bullpen.
What do you think it does for the back end of the rotation with, like, Brandon McCarthy or Ryu, who I think has started to pitch well over his past couple of starts? Alex Wood is at 98 innings. He had two seasons where he threw over 170 in 2014 and 2015.
Yeah, when he had come over in 2015 and he got 12 starts, it helped push him over that limit, so that was helpful for him. But this is obviously by far his best season, and I'd like to be able to see him do it, but you would be a little bit surprised if they just put a ton of pressure on him down the stretch when they do have all of those other arms that you could rely on. You wouldn't be totally surprised, I think, if you saw him get a start or two skip down the stretch, because they do have McCarthy, they do have Ryu, they do have Rich Hill, Darvish, and Kershaw. So, you know, I do think that it makes the back end of the bullpen kind of similar to what they had at the beginning of the season, because they also still have Maeda. I think they're going to be kind of mixing and matching, doing that Phantom DL stuff that they've done. Not that it's necessarily a bad thing, but I do think that there's going to be a lot of mixing and matching with the back end of the bullpen. And when they get to the playoffs, they may just run a three-man rotation out there and use Alex Wood on any time that they actually need him. I wouldn't be totally surprised if that happens.
Well, and the other thing would be with Rich Hill's blister issue, if he just kind of becomes like a long reliever where if he could just throw, you know, three innings on, you know, 3 days rest, you know, that would be...
The good thing about Rich Hill is that he hasn't had any issues lately.
Lately, but he's had a history of doing it, and he has a history of not amassing a ton of innings on his arm. So that's why you have guys like Brandon McCarthy, these kind of just workhorse guys.
Yeah, I mean, as of right now, they have seven capable starters for five spots. And when you get to the playoffs, you need only three or four. So they will have a bunch of people. I wouldn't be totally surprised if they left maybe one of those starters off of the playoff roster, whoever couldn't fit a bullpen spot, which as of right now could easily be Ryu. Just because McCarthy, Maeda, and Alex Wood have all done bullpen stuff. Rich Hill could easily be a bullpen guy. Mm-hmm. So I could easily see Ryu being the person who they leave off of the postseason roster if push comes to shove at that time. But I do think that the back end of this rotation will just kind of mix and match down the stretch, even with Darvish there, because he just replaces Kershaw for the next month. Once Kershaw's back, then... it's going to be really tough to see who gets a start once they run a six-man rotation.
Yeah, which sucks for a guy like me who's been riding a guy like Brandon McCarthy and, you know, kind of wants him to be in the rotation and pitching well. If they're going to be jerking him around because their rotation's so packed, that's going to create problems for not just me, but other fantasy owners as well.
Like me.
Like you.
Why don't we talk about Sonny Gray, who went from Oakland over to the Yankees? What are your thoughts on what Sonny Gray will do for the rest of this season and for next season?
So I've been sort of a Sonny Gray apologist, even though I was kind of low on him going into this year. The one thing, I mean... Oko has been a good thing for him as far as a pitching environment. And over the past couple of years, he's been pretty bad on the road. I think over the past two seasons, he's got like a 4.96 ERA on the road. And Oko's kind of helped. I mean, not that last year was any good for him, but I don't know. I can't really put my finger, and I'm not... I think Sonny Gray's a better real-life pitcher than fantasy pitcher. I don't think this suddenly vaults Sonny Gray into like a, you know, top 25 or top 30 fantasy commodity. I do think it's a tick up just as far as the ball club, as far as wins. I really hate wins and analyzing them, but I mean, I guess that's something you could look at as far as a trade like this. But he's been phenomenal as far as his ratios and rates and whatnot. I'm kind of buying in on Sonny Gray, just like the Yankees are.
I do think that Sonny Gray is going to at least bring some good value over to the Yankees, and I think he's able to help solidify that rotation as of right now, considering what they've got from Tanaka this year with the up and down performances. I do think that it gives them a nice number two behind Severino. And he has pitched well over the last month. He has a 1.48 ERA and a 0.99 whip with more than a K per inning. So that is good to see. And the Yankees are a better club. So in terms of wins, you'll definitely expect to see him get more wins. I still think he'll get a good amount of quality starts, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him, because of the offensive environment of Yankee Stadium, I wouldn't be surprised to see him have some of those ratios go up a little bit, because it's like you said, he's not a top tier pitcher. He's probably a 30 to 35 type guy more than anything else. But I do think that this move puts him firmly into top 40, and I think that me personally, I would see him closer to 30 for the rest of the season.
What do you think long-term as far as...
I still think it is good value for him considering where he was. He wasn't going to have a ton more value playing for Oakland because they weren't going to go anywhere over the next few seasons. But the Yankees at least have a lot more upside, and there's a lot more promise there. I do think that his spot in the rotation, at least as the number two, is pretty much solidified, and I don't think that there's much that you can really hope for in terms of what he gives you. I think he could easily be a guy who gives you, you know, 8 to 8.5 Ks per nine. He's going to have a 3.5 ERA probably and a 1.15 whip. I wouldn't be totally surprised if he sees those type numbers and maybe he's a 13-game winner. I think those type of numbers are pretty decent, and you wouldn't be totally unhappy with them from a top 35 pitcher.
I can see where you come up with all those numbers except for the strikeout rate, which as of right now, his 8.72 K per nine is the highest of his career besides his rookie season where he threw 64 innings. So I don't, you think that, I mean, you said 8.5. You would put, if I set the over under at 8.45 for next year, you'd take the over?
No, I'd still probably, I'd probably take the under because I would expect it to be closer to 8 Ks per nine. Than
okay, 8.5. That's just what, everything else you said as far as his ratios, his, you know, whip, everything else, like I'm buying into it. And that's just what I was curious about. I didn't even mean necessarily going forward as far as the Yankees because of, you know, what his contract situation kind of looks like. But 2016 is kind of this blip on his radar. And I, you know, if you think, you know, maybe he was overperforming his first, 2013 through 2015, or if you think he's a little bit closer to what we saw in 2016?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's probably closer to the 2015 and earlier than the 2016. I think last year injuries kind of hampered him, and he just did not have a good season. There was a lot of negatives in his peripherals and everything that just kind of hurt him, and it just was an unlucky season for him overall, I feel. So I looked at him as a decent buy low option in, coming into this season for that aspect. And it's like you were saying, this year is one of his this year is his best strikeout numbers that he's had, basically. And I could understand how maybe he doesn't have an 8K per 9 season in him going forward. But I think if he continues to stay in the AL East, given the fact that Tampa Bay is a team that will have players that strike out, there are players that will strike out in Boston and in Toronto, I do think that it's a team that he can have that with good defense behind him, that he's going to be able to get Ks. And I think as Gary Sanchez improves as a baseball player, he'll get better as a play caller back there, which will help Sonny Gray out. Did you have anything else to add on Sonny Gray?
Pass.
All right, Evan. The last trade that I want to talk about with you is Jonathan Lucroy going over to Colorado. What are your thoughts on him for the remainder of the season? Is he a potential top 10 catcher for you at this point, considering what his previous track record has been?
God, who the hell knows on Jonathan Lucroy? I cut him in a league, in a 12-team league. I was able to scoop him back up off the wire, given this news. The offensive environment, as far as Coors is concerned, once again, copy-paste analysis, it's a good environment. But Lucroy has been absolute dog crap this year, and I agree that he's a better mix than what Colorado has going on right now. I just hope the Coors effect has enough to kind of counterbalance what we thought. You know, like, he was in Arlington. This was supposed to be a positive move for him, and there was really not a whole lot of fantasy goodness there, and he was a pretty big disappointment for everybody around leagues. So, I mean, I'm buying in certain spots. I think, you know, Coors is kind of one of those things that you always have to, you know, roll the bones against. But I'm not overly excited to own Lucroy by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I'm not overly excited to own him either. I mean, the sad thing is, if you combine what Ryan Hannigan and Tony Walters have done combined on the season as they're the top two catchers, they basically have done exactly what Lucroy has done for the entire season, which is kind of sad when you think about what Lucroy has done in the past. I do think that because of how much of a BABIP help that Colorado is, it will help bring that average up. It may give him a little kick in the ass, and maybe does help his other numbers, given the fact that he's now in a playoff race again, and he's got a really good team around him. But it wasn't like the Rangers were a bad team. They just have had a tough season. They've had a lot of players that just have not performed to their standards. But I do think that he's a borderline top 10 catcher for the remainder of the season. But at least in two catcher leagues, he's someone that I may look to try to acquire in a trade if I can get him for cheap enough. Is there anything else you want to add on him?
I mean, I guess the one thing that I would kind of throw out there is, hang on one second. Where do you think he's going to hit in the lineup? My thought is that, you know, if he's going to bat towards the eight end, and of course, you know, the pitcher's got to bat and whatever, but if Charlie Blackmon is going to be this amazing, you know, phenomenon that we talked about before we fired the mics up, and, you know, he's going to get, you know, better hitters hitting behind him, even though he's got to get through that pitcher spot, I understand that, but couldn't that boost his value for the few times that he does manage to get on base?
I mean, it could. I would presume that the lineup is a Blackmon, LeMahieu, Arenado, Cargo, Reynolds, Trevor Story, Lucroy, Parra, and then whoever else is left, basically, at that point. I guess you could easily say that Ian Desmond probably is ahead of him when he comes back as well. Not that he's had a fantastic season, but he probably is ahead of him. So I think that Lucroy starts out at best at number six in the lineup because, you know, who else in the top six are you really taking out other than Carlos Gonzalez that, you know, who's had maybe the most underwhelming start to his entire career at this point of the season. But, you know, there's not a lot of players that you can really just necessarily go and be like, oh, well, let's put Lucroy ahead of him. Because you know that the top four or five players in that lineup aren't changing. So that puts him at five at the best. And I wouldn't expect him to bat off at fifth, given the fact that there's other players who have done well on the season, like Parra, like Reynolds. Desmond's had a decent season. I mean, Trevor Story hasn't had a great season, but he still has 15 home runs at this point. So at least he's able to knock people in, unlike Jonathan Lucroy.
Yeah, real quick, close your eyes and tell me when Jonathan Lucroy hit his last home run.
I would have to say over a month ago.
Yeah, June 9th, I'm scrolling through the game log. I keep thinking that I'm missing it as I go all the way through it, but it was June 9th at Washington. So,
yeah, I mean, his numbers over the last month have been so poor. He's hitting 167. He's got 8 RBIs, 6 runs, and a stolen base. I mean, he's almost got as many RBIs as he has hits. He has not been able to perform well. If you compared his numbers over the last month to everyone else that's playing on the Rockies, he's significantly lower. He's 90 points lower than Trevor Story and Carlos Gonzalez. The only other hitter who's at even close on the Rockies right now is Mark Reynolds, and he's still 60 points higher than Jonathan Lucroy over the last month.
I mean, they all suck compared to Charlie Blackmon, but yeah.
Well, yes, but even Arenado and LeMahieu actually have better averages over the last month than Charlie Blackmon. Just so you're aware.
Erroneous.
Did you have anything else to add on Lucroy?
No, not really.
So, Evan, if you have nothing else to add on Jonathan Lucroy, why don't we move into Charlie Blackmon? He has had an absolutely fantastic season to this point. On the season, he's got 93 runs, which leads the league, which surprised both you and I that he had that many. He's got 24 home runs, 70 RBIs, 9 steals, and a 328 average. Has he officially moved into the top 15 for you for next year's draft?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we were looking at this because of the league that I was in where we were looking at total bases and we were searching for Jonathan Scope, who is number 10. But Charlie Blackman leads the league with total bases at 259. Second is Nolan Arenado at 243. Third is Jose Altuve at 230. So he's, you know, ahead of the pack and by a decent margin. Blackman's definitely a top 15 guy. I'd throw him into the first round in the back end around that, you know, 9-10 spot, maybe even a little bit higher. I love Blackman. What can I say, Ben? Fraser.
I mean, I'm a big Charlie Blackman fan as well. When you and I were going through players that could or could not be ahead of him in next year's drafts, you know, we did come up with some names that I would say other owners may find a little bit surprising to some capacity, given who has been there in the past and who may not be in there for next year. But we had discussed that Charlie Blackman is most likely going to be picked ahead of players like a Joey Votto, a Mookie Betts, a Manny Machado, George Springer, Freddie Freeman, Carlos Correa, and Aaron Judge. Which, you know, those are good lists, and obviously you could easily make the case to pick any one of those players over Charlie Blackman, but there's nothing that Charlie Blackman has done over the last few seasons that makes you think that he's going to slow down at any point. He keeps adding more power as he plays. He's in a fantastic lineup. He's got other hitters behind him that will always drive him in an Arenado. He's got players that will move him along in DJ LeMahieu. He's still able to get 20 steals in the season if he wanted to. I'm not sure if you can make an argument to not have him in the top 15 for next year.
I don't think there's an argument either. Like, Judge has kind of cooled off. You want to mention George Springer, who, you know, the batting average and the home runs kind of hold him there, but Springer's got 82 runs by himself. I'm definitely in that conversation. I think he's definitely a top 15 guy. I don't think there's any conversation about that. We're kind of spinning our tires. Him or Freddie Freeman next year for you?
I'd still go Charlie Blackman in that instance. I think the surprising thing is, and the reason I brought up George Springer, is that in 62 less at-bats than what Charlie Blackman has, he's only 11 runs behind him, which is a testament to how good the Astros lineup is. I mean, George Springer has 3 more home runs than him. He's got 4 less RBIs and 5 less steals. He's hitting .310 himself, so, you know, you could easily wait an extra 10 picks and go get George Springer, who's basically doing what Charlie Blackman is, but just to a lesser degree. And we do know how good Houston's lineup is and how good it probably will be next year as well. So it wouldn't be the most unconventional thing to think that George Springer is capable of putting up Charlie Blackman-type numbers at the same point next year.
Yeah, and when we were talking about this, did we put the nail in Miggy's like top 15 first round value, or
we hadn't officially, but I think at this point it's kind of turning itself into that type of position, because I believe that Miggy is a player that could rebound next year and could prove everyone who doubts him wrong, and it wouldn't surprise me whatsoever. But I can't see how we can take someone like Miggy in the top 25 picks, given what he's performed to this season. I mean, like Josh Donaldson, are you going to take Josh Donaldson in the top 25 picks next year?
I'm not a big Donaldson guy, but no.
Who would you expect to rebound next year between the two of them?
Miggy.
Because, I mean, the reason I bring that up is because Donaldson is clearly still hurt. He never really recovered from the calf injury that put him on the DL twice this year. He doesn't look like he's able to drive the ball as well. He's striking out more as a result, and it's not like he's super old and that he's necessarily out of his prime. I just think that he's having an injury-riddled season, much like I think that Miggy is. But Miggy's had injuries other season and has always been able to play through them, and this year just looks slow. He doesn't look like he's able to play through it, and I don't think that we can consider either of them top 25 options next year. And I think, considering what we've seen out of Miggy, that, you know, that starts going down a bad road. Like, are we going to see him turn into a Pujols type player in the next few seasons, do you think?
God, I hope not.
Do you
I
think
don't
it's
know.
Possible, though? Because he has had a ton of injuries. You saw Pujols have a ton of injuries, and you just saw him get more and more deteriorated. I do think that Miggy is a better player than that, but we also thought that Albert Pujols was one of the best, and now look at him.
Well, yeah, okay, so the one thing I'd say about, like, the Pujols decline is you can say what you want about Pujols' numbers overall. The dude still hit 70 home runs between 2015 and 2016, which I think Miggy could do. You could see a power spike come back where Miggy goes back to hitting 30 home runs. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities. The one thing that I want to point at Miggy real quick, and I don't know if you're looking at his page, but close your eyes real quick and tell me the last time Miguel Cabrera hit under 300 for a season.
Has he ever done it, maybe outside of his rookie season?
His rookie season, which was in 2003. 2004, he had a 294. And then 2008, which was his first year with the Tigers, he hit 292. Every season, other than that, he's hit above not just 300, hit above 310. And this year he's at 259. Struggling a little bit. His BABIP is a little lower. Miggy's one of those guys that has a, you know, when you talk about league average being around 300, his BABIP for his career is like 346. So he's a guy that you typically see a little bit higher, and those extra, you know, 40 points of BABIP could give him another, you know, 30 points of batting average. But I mean, he's still, you know, in a decline as far as the average eye is concerned. But as far as the power is concerned, like I said, a la Pujols, I think we could still see another 30 home run season out of him, no problem.
Yeah, I mean, this is McGee's worst season in terms of his slugging percentage. He's more than 100 points under where he's been for the last 8 seasons, it looks like, if not more. The only other time he's had a slugging under 500 is his rookie season, where he slugged 468. His on-base percentage is good because he takes a ton of walks, but because of his slugging, like, his OPS is down 200 points, basically what it was from the last 2 years, and it's kind of tragic to see that he's just had such a bad season that he's fallen off. And, you know, it's tough that he's not able to bring up that average, and you would think that he would be able to, but there's just nothing in his numbers this year that makes you think he's going to be coming around and making improvements.
Look at his offensive WAR numbers. If you're on Fangraphs, it's kind of hilarious that he's been pretty much a 22 offensive WAR guy based on the Fangraphs metric for every year of his career, and this year he's actually a negative offensive WAR guy.
Yeah. Another player that I want to discuss is Manny Machado. Has Manny Machado moved out of your top 15, and is there any chance that you could see him coming back in if he is out of there at some point this season?
I'm just kind of sour on Machado. I don't know if it was like last year with the speed, and we've seen six steals out of him this year, which is kind of a plus. And he's on pace to kind of hit in that high, you know, 20s. Is he technically on pace to hit 30 home runs?
Right now, he is at 18.
He's right in that range. If he hits, you know, 5 home runs a month, which is kind of what I, you know, rough math.
He'd essentially have to hit 6 for the next 2 months. Just to guarantee that he's there. And over the last month, he has, he hit 3 over the last month. So I'm not really sure if if that's going to be something that we see out of Manny Machado this year. Over the last month or so, he's been hitting at a good clip, and he's been taking walks. And it's nice to see him have six steals this year, but I'm just not sure if he's a player that is going to necessarily bounce back into that top tier.
Yeah, I don't know. His batting average is in the toilet right now, and I mean, some of it might be a little BABIP related, but I think if you're talking about sour grapes and if I put the over under at 31.5 home runs for next season, not seeing the next 2 months going in blind, what would you say?
I would say he probably doesn't. He seems more of a 26 type player to me. I know that he's capable of it, but unless he's able to improve his overall hitting and improve that luck that he's that bad luck that he's had this year, I think that it's going to be a little tough. I think that he's kind of overdone things because he's had such a bad season that it's kind of taken away from his power numbers. So I think once he's able to relax, I think he's capable of it, but I think he would be a sub 31 guy next year.
Well, and so if you want to talk about the drop off there from him and you want to take a look at who could be rising, because he's going to lose shortstop eligibility next year, right? He hasn't played a game at short from what I'm looking at on his game log.
Yes.
Okay, so he's going to be third base eligible. And so you're looking at these guys like, you know, Jose Ramirez, Travis Shaw, Anthony Rendon, Jake Lamb, guys that are going to creep up into the third base conversation, along with guys like Chris Bryant and Nolan Arenado and Josh Donaldson, if you want to throw him in there. Miguel Sano, we know how awesome he is. Freddie Freeman, if he's third base eligible next year, I mean, and that chips away at Machado's draft day price as far as ADP. So, like, how far realistically could you see him tumble?
I mean, I guess I think that the name value alone will not allow Manny Machado to tumble because of what he's done in the past. So I do think that as long as he has a decent last two months of the season, he'll still be a top 30-ish pick. But I'm not sure if the value is going to return itself at that top 30 level. I think that you may be better off waiting for a player like Jose Ramirez if he falls outside of the top 30, or a player like Anthony Rendon if he falls out of there. I mean, you could even wait to go and take a player like Travis Shaw or Mike Moustakas, and, you know, they have 54 home runs combined between them, and they're both hitting better than what Manny Machado is. Even Jake Lamb is having a better season at this point than what Manny Machado is. So it's tough to say that what Machado has done in the past can necessarily not inflate his value automatically, which kind of takes away the value for me as a fantasy owner if I'm looking at it impartially.
Right.
Did you have anything else to add on Manny Machado?
Pass.
The last player that I wanted to discuss was the rise of Corey Kluber. And he's had such a fantastic season since he came back from his injury. Do you think that Corey Kluber is someone who may have played himself into a top 20 or even a top 10 pick going into next season? Because that K rate is absolutely phenomenal. He is pitching lights out. He's got a sub-1 ERA, which only a few players in the league have, with given how many innings. And he's got a sub-3 ERA, and it's getting better. I mean, over the last month, do you want to take a guess at what his ERA over the last month is and how many Ks to innings pitch he has?
I'm sorry, say that again. His ERA over the last month?
And what his Ks to innings pitched are?
Probably a like a 0.8 ERA, Ks to innings pitched. Probably, I don't know, 35 to like 30, 31, something like that.
He's got 56 Ks to 34 innings.
Oh, wow.
And his ERA is a little higher. It's 2.62. But the only reason that is because his last start against the White Sox, he gave up 4 earned runs in 6 innings, but he had 12 strikeouts.
He's had double digit
strikeouts in 8 of his last 9 games. In the other game that he didn't, he had 8 Ks in 5 innings. Like, he's just getting, he's just having a phenomenal stretch, and he's given up 10 earned runs in those 34 innings, and like I said, 4 of them were given up in the last start.
Yeah, he's... I was just thinking of Dumb and Dumber the whole time, where he was like, I was way off. So I was looking at his numbers. I had the split pulled up from the beginning of June through July 31st, so I was looking at slightly different numbers. So over those last 77 innings, if you want to break it down, he's got a K per 9 of over 14, while a walks per 9 of 1.6, 41% strikeout rate. Yeah, the dude's been good, and he's had splits. He's well noted that he's a slow starter, and I think there was kind of a, you know, amplified long Indians playoff run or whatnot. Kluber's been fantastic. I laughed at Chuck a little bit when he mentioned that Kluber was his, like, 13th or 14th guy when we did our 2-round mock draft. I see it. I mean, I definitely see it. But you take him over Mad Bum next year, assuming, you know, everything stays par for the course.
I think that's something that I'd have to consider strongly, given what he's done. And if Mad Bum doesn't show me anything over the last 2 months in terms of increased velocity, it may be a little tough for me to necessarily just go and pick him. He's had a ton of innings on that shoulder. He did have the injury. I'm just not sure if he's going to necessarily go and reclaim that velocity. I think he's still going to be a good K guy. He's going to be a good whip guy and a good ERA guy. But, you know, if he doesn't have those K numbers that Kluber has, it's tough to pick him up. I mean, who would you – did you know that Kluber over the last month is tied for the most amount of strikeouts in the entire league, and he's tied with Sale in the same amount of innings?
That's pretty good.
And who would you guess over the last month has a better ERA between Kluber and Scherzer?
I would say Scherzer, but I'm guessing I'm wrong.
Yeah. Scherzer has a 2.84 to Kluber's 2.62. He's also got a 1.07 whip to Kluber's 0.99. Like, only a few pitchers in the league have a better whip over the last month than Corey Kluber. And I don't think that you'd pick... I think of the three of the four to do that I can see at the top tier, I'm not picking them. I don't think you'd pick Tanaka, Noah, or James Paxton over him. You would pick Chris Sale probably, but that's about it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how big of a Nola guy I am. I'm definitely not taking him over Kluber. So.
Yeah. So do you think that Kluber is someone who, given where pitching has been this year, do you think that Kluber is someone who's going to shoot up draft boards? Because I do think, me personally, that Scherzer, Kershaw, and Sale could all be top 13 picks next year, which could force players to go and take someone like a Mad Bum or a Kluber into top 20 as a result.
Okay, when you say where pitching is this year, you mean like the injury landscape with this 10-day DL, or are you talking about from a performance landscape, or what are you referring to?
I'm talking a little bit about both. Obviously, we have seen some performances this year that pitchers have done worse, and that's just because offenses have got better as more home runs have been hit, and we have seen it over the last few seasons that because of the improvement in offense, we've seen obviously a decrease in pitching performance. And for the super standout pitchers, you know, their value is just so high and far away better than, you know, someone else. So you'll see someone like a Scherzer that is going to go miles ahead of someone like a Jacob deGrom, just because Jacob deGrom's had such a great season, but it's still nowhere near what Max Scherzer has had. So, obviously, someone like DeGrom, who has had a great season, probably better than what a lot of owners coming into the season were thinking, that he may have played himself into the top 40 potentially, but that's not going to stop you from taking Max Scherzer probably pick 8 next year.
Right. The reason that I asked is because if we're talking about injury, I mean, Kluber had the back injury. It's not like he's been, you know, bulletproof. He's had a DL stint too. So if you were talking about the injury landscape, I was gonna bring that up. But I think if you're talking about a performance landscape, Kluber has shown that he's definitely been able to weather that.
Yeah, I mean, over the last 3 seasons, he's had fantastic numbers. I do know that he's had the back injury thing this year, but he has been relatively durable outside of that. I mean, you have a player like Kershaw who's had the back injury the last few seasons. You know, James Paxton has injuries. Rich Hill has injuries. Carlos Carrasco does. I'm just trying to think of other players who have performed this year. You know, you have Bumgarner's had injuries. Syndergaard's had the injuries. And then you have players who have done well in the past who have had injury scares at some point. You know, you had Garrett Cole last year, and then he had a 4-game stretch this year that he just didn't know what was going on, and a lot of owners probably thought he was hurt. Darvish has had his own injuries. I mean, there's a lot of players out there who do carry their own injury risk with it. I think the only players that you can really say really don't, Madison Bumgarner up till this year, you have Zach Greinke, you have Chris Sale, who everyone used to think was always going to get hurt, and Max Scherzer. There's not a lot of other top-tier pitchers that you can really say, I'm expecting him to be able to pitch an entire season.
I completely agree.
Evan, is there anything else that you want to add on anything that we've talked about tonight or any other topics you want to talk about?
Is this you? I mean, can we have our 5-minute Chuck, you know, will you stop dying on me, please? God, we're going to have a memorial segment for you next week after you die. So Chuck gave us, he was throwing out some topics, and the one question of his that I like, not that I don't like all of his questions, but the one that I kind of want to touch on real quick, which breakout this year do you trust most going forward? And he threw out Corey Dickerson, Justin Smoke, Justin Bour, and Yonder Alonso.
I think Dickerson would be my pick. I just think that
I agree.
He's been someone who I thought was capable of doing it after he had that one great season for the Rockies. I thought he was going to be able to do it again. And, you know, I'm a tad disappointed that he hadn't, but he had shown signs at other points of being able to hit power. But he seems like he's being able to put everything together right now. And, I mean, he's hitting .300 on the season. He's got 19 home runs. He's got 64 runs and 46 RBIs. And if I am correct, he's been hitting leadoff for a majority of the season. I don't really see that there's going to be a massive regression going forward, as I see with the other players.
He hit leadoff for a majority of the first part of the season. Over the last 2 months, he's been hitting in the second spot, recently hitting sixth over the past 2 games, as I'm looking at it on the game log. But the one thing is, I mean, we've kind of seen these things from Corey Dickerson, so they shouldn't have come out of nowhere. Like, we've seen him hit .300 before. We've seen him hit 20-plus home runs before.
This is his best home run season.
Well, if you average it out.
Well, he's got a career best this year with 19 home runs, 44 RBIs, and 64 runs. I don't see how that's possible, but that's just what RotoWire is telling me.
I'm looking at his FanGraphs page, which says that in 2014 he hit 24 home runs, 74 runs, and 76 RBI.
Well, you know what? I'm just going off what I'm reading on the internet, and the internet's lying to me. They're lying.
Yeah, the internet's never lied to me, so I don't know what you're talking about.
I lie to you all the time, though, through the internet, so does that count?
You are fake news. What the one part of this that I did want to bring up was, I think we've kind of touched on Yonder Alonso a little bit in the past, but if you had to pick between Smoke and Boar, either for the rest of the season or going forward over the next, say, like 2 years, in like a dynasty type sense, who would you pick?
I think I would pick Boar.
I believe we talked about this, and the one thing that I saw in Boar's stats that we touched on, and I don't know if the name ever came up to you, Boar had never hit a home run off left-handed pitching in the majors before this year, off of what I'm looking at anyways, and he's hit 6 this year. So it was a big thing coming into drafts this year because Realmuto, one J.D. Realmuto, as Chuck might say, was supposed to be taking first base reps away from Justin Boar against lefties, and Boar's been whacking over 300 and putting him over the fence. So, I mean, Boar's been doing the same thing. He's nuts against left-handers. He's gotten over 1,100 OPS against lefties, and that definitely was not his forte earlier in his career, but I'm with you on the Boar talk.
Yeah, I think that I kind of saw a breakout from Boar last year, and he had the injury. And this year, he's just been doing such a good job. And I would have thought he would have got traded. I just kind of thought that the Marlins would have actually made some other moves. The only player they seemed to really move of any value was A.J. Ramos, and that was to the Mets. And I was kind of surprised about that in general. But
yeah. Do you think that's just like a service to whoever's going to buy the team? Like they don't want to mess with their big, and you know, maybe they see Justin Boar as a big piece, but maybe they just didn't want to, you know, tear apart the band and kind of let whoever was going to come in afterwards do that.
No, I kind of would have expected that the team who gets the owner who gets the team would have wanted a fresh start in general. Now, I obviously understand that you can go and just move all of those pieces, but I would have kind of figured that, you know, they would have liked to have other players.
Right, but wouldn't you rather go get the guys that you want if you're going to buy the team with the pieces as opposed to just get what the other guy thought was good when he sold them off?
Yes and no. I mean, if Boar has a terrible last 2 months of the season, then his value dramatically tanks.
Well, and then it's a gamble on the rest of the season.
You've seen Dan Straley struggle over the last month. His value has gone down. I mean, there's players that have lost value, which just is a little bit surprising. You know, I'm surprised the Yankees didn't go out and get a first baseman. I think if the Yankees had done this Sonny Gray deal earlier than 3 o'clock this afternoon, then they would have been able to focus on getting someone like a Justin Boar or some other first baseman. But I'm a little bit surprised they didn't go. But I would have figured that would have been a player that they liked to try to acquire, and that would have been a home run haven for him.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they're optimistic about Greg Bird, who's supposed to be coming back in the second half of August here. I don't know. I love Boar, though, but I don't mean to push Smoke under the rug because he's had a fantastic season, too. We can piss on Yonder Alonso all we want. But
yeah, he's really, really regressed, and it's unfortunate because he had such a great first half, and he's just done terribly as of right now. So,
well, at least we got to shit on Yonder Alonso in memory of Chuck, because I know that's what he would have wanted.
Yes. Evan, is there anything else that you want to discuss?
No, we've talked about how much we miss Chuck and how much I'm going to miss you once you're gone. So it will be good.
After I die?
After, well, the editing magic, you didn't even know that Ben was coughing his ass off the whole podcast.
What coughing? I have no idea what you're talking about.
Me either.
Evan, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
Usually you can just find me on these podcasts is the best way. At FWFB on the Twitter machine, we're trying to put together baseball stuff. We are putting together baseball stuff this year. Yeah, edit. And you can be looking forward to another episode with me, Ben, and whatever band of misfits we round up to spew fantasy football goodness. There might be a special project from FWFB, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, coming down the pipeline. So stay tuned for those news and leave us a rate and review so we can keep doing what we love and providing you guys with great information.
and I can be reached at bbrandsfwfb. I am also on the podcast for football, as Evan was saying. We'll be joined by Eric Mackey this season, potentially a couple other guest appearances. But I'm also on the baseball and basketball podcast. Basketball, I'm joined by Eric Mackey as well. So just give those a listen as well and a rate and review. We always appreciate it. And we look forward to having Chuck back next week. But from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.